Zorn, Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Reminds me of church.
Oh, it is church-like.
It's Wendy, a church.
Please put your envelope in the basket, by the way, please.
You may now be seated.
Eric Zorn is here, award-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune.
I've won awards.
That's I know you have.
I have.
It's impressive. Eric, there's several things to talk about with you, but you wanted to start out with this, and that's some inside information about IBM. What's going on at IBM?
I wouldn't say it's inside information. The story was in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, but IBM.
An obscure paper.
An obscure paper. No one has really heard of it, but it's a really interesting story. And, you know, basically IBM, obviously a big computer maker, was really a champion of what they called the anytime, anywhere workforce, the telecommuting, working at home. You know, this was something that the home computer, the PC, really facilitated. And this was a big boon. And it's been going on for 25 years or more, right?
I mean, it's pretty amazing.
It's been a really long time. What was your first home computer? Do you remember?
Gateway. I ordered it online.
I don't remember the brand name of the first. What was yours?
One of the things that happened at the Tribune was that our boxes upstairs were really, really bad. They were always losing things.
Yeah.
So your home computer, even when I had like a compact suitcase computer, remember those? You carry it around, and you had to put the floppy disks in it and everything. But those were good enough that I found that when I had writing to do, I would go home and write because the computer was so much better.
Really?
And it was more reliable. You could save it, you wouldn't lose stuff, and it was really good.
Did you keep a typewriter nearby just in case? Or was at some point did you just go, I will never need this again, ever?
Once you got a computer, you didn't need a typewriter.
No, I didn't. But the whole thing was that I was one of the people who really believed early on that working from home was going to be the way to go for a lot of jobs. Now, obviously, in radio, but there are some people in radio who work from home, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
And you can do it.
The sound quality is really excellent.
Yeah.
So this was like supposed to be the wave of the future. We would all be atomized. We'd all be in our basements or in our spare rooms, and employers would save a lot of money. One of the big things, they thought that they would be able to have smaller offices and, you know, it really save on real estate.
Sure,
costs.
Of course.
But IBM has just announced that they are going to basically call people home. They say that workers in affected IBM divisions have been given 30 days to decide whether to move into office space, and that in some cases is hundreds of miles from their homes. And they say that this isn't about cost saving for them. The article says that it's a broader rethink underway at large companies all over the country. Corporate leaders are finding out that putting employees in the same physical space hastens the speed of work and sparks innovation. Employers tread a fine line, however, since workers rate flexible work programs highly, the article says, and research has found telecommuters often work more effectively than their cubicle-bound counterparts. I found this to be true. I have a long experience. I worked at home almost exclusively for about 15 years.
Did you?
I did because what happened was I was based in the suburbs for the Tribune for a while. My column was more suburban-based. And I was in these small offices with a bunch of colleagues. My supervisor was downtown.
Yeah.
And then I realized at some point that I was like driving out to Tinley Park and then back out to Rosemont. And I said, this is crazy. I could just stay in my apartment or drive to Tinley Park and back to my apartment and write. Wouldn't have to go fight the traffic. And then my employers didn't even know where I was most of the time. I mean, they could call me, they could find me, but and it didn't matter. And then I found that I did work better. I worked more efficiently, and I could start earlier and end later. And I really, really liked it. Anybody who's ever worked from home, you guys ever?
I can't do it. I'm not determined enough. I need to get out and get somewhere.
My wife can't do it either. And she's got the kind of job where some of the things that she does, she could do from home, but she just finds that she needs to go. And she'll go into the office if she's got a bunch of reading to do and a bunch of writing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get motivated. My husband works from home.
Yeah. And I'm really good at it. And at working from home, whether I'm good at what I do, I'll leave that to the songwriters to evaluate. But I think that it's a really nice environment to work in. But there is a price to be paid for that. There is something that you do miss. I think that IBM is correct in some ways that when you come to an office, and I've been coming to the office lately more and more often.
We can tell your social skills are better now.
Much better.
Yeah,
far better.
Because really, when you're at home, you don't have to deal with anybody else.
Yeah, put on pants.
Can wear sweats. Yeah.
But here's what's getting lost in that, and you hit on it a little bit. just the mere interaction of people talking to people, being around people, like Wendy makes fun of me and my wife does too. I still go to the bank. I still do things that could easily be done online, like shopping. Everybody I know does all their stuff online. I go to stores physically because I like the interaction. And I think that this is the last generation where that's become an option, where now people would go, hey, you just stay home and do everything from your computer.
When you say become an option, a lot of stores, if you want to buy a book now, you got to seek out a bookstore. They're not around every corner like they used to be. It's very difficult.
I've only bought one or two books online because I like the hunt, and I like being in a Barnes & Noble. You know, those still exist, thankfully.
Or Anderson's.
Or Anderson
still
exists.
Some bookstores.
Yeah. Borders. Oh, no.
Borders did not still exist.
J. Dalton bookseller.
Right.
B. Dalton.
B. Dalton is gone.
No wonder
Walden
went out of business.
Was his evil brother.
Walden Books is gone.
Oh, yeah. I had the preferred card.
Crock and Brentano's is gone.
Oh, I love that in Oakbrook.
Yeah.
You know, there is a value to that, but I think that we are discovering some things about this, and this is related somewhat to what they're discovering about education, which is that you can't do everything with tech. You can't do everything with iPads and computers. You actually need that one-to-one human interaction.
Absolutely.
And sometimes even the tactile interaction with a paper. They find that kids who read things on paper in book form remember it better than when they read it on a tablet or on a computer screen. And I can't really figure out why that would be the case. It doesn't make intuitive sense to me, but it does seem to be the case. Mm-hmm. And again, there is something about these things like Slack. Do you guys have a Slack channel here at GM?
What is that?
It's like an interoffice bulletin board messaging system.
Do we have that?
I don't think we're part of it.
You guys might have one for your show. I mean,
Kevin, do we have one?
No.
Kevin's not aware,
Kevin could probably explain it better than I can. But I mean, these are things. And with FaceTime meetings and so on, virtual meetings, you can do all this stuff. But there is something to be said for just being around people.
Right.
You know, I got my office upstairs, and I like to just, you know, sit around. We talk about stuff. And it's not always just talking about, you know, it's not always agenda-driven conversation.
Right, sure.
It's interaction. And you just come and say, what about this story? What about this guy Donald Trump? What do you think about him?
Yeah.
You know, things like that, where you'll have these conversations. And then they will grow into things. One of the things that, since I've been coming to the office a lot more in the last 10 years or so, I really like the meetings that we have. Most people hate meetings, but I really like them because it's my chance to get out from the bubble that I can live in online and with my newspapers and so on. I can sit there with my head down at my desk or staring into a screen to actually listen to other people talk. And, of course, the editorial board's general views tend to differ from mine in significant ways. So it's really interesting to talk to people I really like and respect, listen to them voice their views on issues in a non, you know, we're not on the phone yelling at each other. We're just talking across the room and that itself. So I'm curious how this is going to play out for IBM. Yahoo did it a few years ago. You might remember, I think it was Sheryl Sandberg, the woman who took over Yahoo. She sort of noticed that the parking lots were empty and she said, what's going on here? And she called everybody back. Bank of America and Aetna did this also. And they just find that it strengthens your company culture, your identity, with your organization, and this helps them boost their bottom line. It is ironic though that it's IBM that's the major one, because they're the ones whose technology really helped lead the way toward being able to do this. So
that's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll pick this conversation up in just a little bit. If you want to participate, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. That's the call in and the text line. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Bill Leff and Bing Crosby with you on WGN. Eric Zorn.
I think you have to say celebrity voice impersonated.
Celebrity voice impersonated.
Well,
Thank you.
People know that.
Thank you for that, Eric. Eric Zorn is here of the Chicago Tribune, and we're talking about stuff as we often do on a Monday. All right, so the next thing you want to discuss was the Illinois governor's race. This should be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. You know, the money front runner is J.B. Pritzker on the Democratic side, and obviously Bruce Rauner on the Republican side, Governor Rauner. Governor Rauner got a $20 million infusion from Ken Griffin, who's the richest man in Illinois. I don't know where Rauner rates on that list of richest people in Illinois, but Ken Griffin...
Pritzker
is somewhere between Griffin and Rauner.
Yeah.
And what's happened right now is that a lot of Democrats, a lot of establishment Democrats, are thinking we need to have a really, really rich guy to go up against all this money. Because Griffin and Rauner together, plus, you know, Uline, there's all these other people who dump a lot of money into Republican causes, and they really want to take the House from Mike Madigan. They really want to try to take the Senate. I mean, they're probably not going to be able to take the House, and they certainly won't take the Senate. But they really, you know, they are seriously spending money. And so Pritzker is the one who a lot of the establishment Democrats are going for. Chris Kennedy is also pretty wealthy, but he's not in that league quite.
All right, so is there no disconnect? If you're the average voter, don't you say to yourself, I don't know that my problems are the same as the really, really rich. So I would like to find somebody who's got the same problems that I have. Does that not exist anymore?
Well, there are certainly candidates who are like that. Dan Biss, who is probably your state senator.
Yeah, he is.
Up north, is running in Emea-Poar. The alderman is running here from in Chicago. Poar's put a lot of miles on his car going all over the state, and he's got a shoestring campaign, certainly compared to the other two, and Biss also. Biss is the former math professor at the University of Chicago, someone who really understands the budget and is one of those people whose campaign coffers are comparatively dry. But it's still just May, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this primary election is until March.
Mm-hmm.
But things are already starting to happen that are sort of interesting. Well, I don't know, did you see the story recently where they're dinging Pritzker because this is how rich he is. He had a mansion up on the Gold Coast, and he bought the mansion next door as a buffer.
As a shed.
As a shed. And he disconnects the toilets and lets things go to seed a little bit so that he could then go to the property tax. He will say, well, this thing, you know, I know it's sold for, you know, I forget the numbers, but it sold for $6 million, but it's not worth anything
it.
Like that. Now it's uninhabitable. So he got a really nice tax break on that. And people are, you know, trying to point out that he's some sort of a hypocrite because of that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to stick with him, because we're sort of past that in politics. I think when nothing stuck to Trump, when Trump was talking about all the deductions that he took, he's like, hey, I'm a smart guy. And I think if I'm advising Pritzker, I'm saying, hey, just say, hey, yeah, this is the system. I took advantage of the system because I'm a smart guy, and I'll be smart with your money too.
Yeah.
But he has started a website called CrisisCreatingRauner.com, which is a really
folksy speak,
a really lousy name for a website, I think. It's to combat BossMadigan.com, and I'm sure some other sites are going to come up to go attack Pritzker. But their idea is that, and I think this is true, that the Republicans have been mounting a very steady and hard campaign against the Democrats, particularly Mike Madigan. Mike Madigan's Speaker of the House. He's been Speaker of the House for, I think, 33 of the last 35 years, something like that. And they've been going after Madigan, demonizing Madigan, using this website and things. So that he's coming back. Now, Pritzker's coming back, and he is really pushing a counterweight to this, trying to make these arguments that we have now, our budget crisis is now 691 days long.
Right.
And they're really highlighting that. Right now in Springfield, we have about a week and a half. It's a week from Wednesday that this legislative session ends, and they all go home for the summer. And they keep saying they're close. If you guys listen to Rick Pearson's show, everybody should listen to that show.
Sunday Spin.
Sunday Spin, yeah, it's a great program. Or if you can't, the podcast is also really vital. But he has people on, and they talk about, oh, we're getting closer. But they're still far apart, it seems to me, on some really key issues. And they're talking about, you know, how they're going to change workers' comp, what kind of tax rates they're going to have. They want to throw in property tax freeze. And the property tax freeze is something that is not really related to the state budget. The state doesn't collect property taxes. Mm-hmm. The counties collect property taxes. But they want to impose, I think now it's down to a four-year freeze, where they say, you know, and that means, it means that the levy is frozen, not necessarily your individual bill. And so what happens, though, is that can really, really hamstring communities. So the city managers, village managers, mayors are really worried about this, because this is how they pay for police and fire and all these other things, and in many cases a lot of their education bills.
Right.
You've got a lot of pushback there, but they're using this as an attempt to leverage the income tax hike, which is everybody now realizes is coming. And this, so they've got all these moving parts going on, and there's only like 9 days left.
Bruce Rauner was outspoken about term limits, but now he's running for a second term. When he would discuss term limits, was two his limit, or was...
I don't know that he's ever specified that, but that tends to be when they talk about term limits. They tend to have a two-term limit.
Cap it at two.
In states. I mean, there's some states where you can only run once. There's some places where you can only be mayor once. And term limits is a fine thing to debate if you want to. I mean, there's certainly, you can argue it either way, but whether it's up to the voters to decide whether someone goes back, or whether you need to in order to make sure that you don't have people who are entrenched in power hang on to their jobs for too long. But there's no question in my mind, having studied this, that it doesn't have anything to do with your state budget. There's no evidence that says, well, states with term limits are better managed, have better budgets, are more lean and green. And one other thing that has come up that I think is worth talking about is the Better Government Association has just put out a report pointing out how difficult it's going to be for them to cut the budget. You know, we have this image that, oh, they're down in Springfield throwing money down the sewers. And this report outlines that Illinois has fewer state workers, spends less on Medicaid per patient, and has the worst in the nation record for supporting local schools. State. So when you start going and saying, well, we're going to cut state spending, you got nowhere to go.
Right.
And so this is the problem that they're facing right now. Plus, of course, we already owe $14 billion in back bills. And
good
I did a column
golly.
On this last week. We have a late payment penalty every day of like $2 million. $2 million a day. We are burning because this is money that we are going to owe in late payment fees. Plus, we're spending $17 million a day more than we're taking in revenue. So the state is falling behind, further and further behind. And
How can the state do that? And if we as people would do that, we'd lose our credit cards and any ability to purchase anything.
And the only person I know with an answer to that is how to solve it is Steve Bertrand.
Well, Steve Bertrand's coming on next.
That
should solve that problem. Eric, thank you very, very much.
Good to see you guys.
It's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll talk to Steve and find out what he has next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.